You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, welcome back to another episode. I am your host, Captain Dean, on location at Mellow Matt's Music and More. And Matt is here on location as well. And he said, come in now, and all eight tracks are 50 cents, including the Statler Brothers.
Or cheaper.
All eight tracks are a penny. Buy 10, get 5 free. I got nothing. There you go. All El Astronauta posters are free with an 8-track purchase. Wow, what a way to start it. I am here with my guest this round is Mr. Jack Fiddler. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me out. I appreciate
it. Thank you for being here. We are on location at Mellow Matt's Music and More because it is the superior music store, and it's a great vibe to talk about music.
I love it. It smells like records.
It does smell like records.
And I like that smell.
It smells a little bit like incense, too.
That as well.
Every time I go home, like about 3 hours later, I can still smell it. Well, thank you for being here, and we will get started with the ultimate question of where are you from?
I was born and raised in Nashville.
You are an actual Nashville native.
Yeah, they say it's a unicorn or something like that.
It is, because most people in Nashville are not from Nashville.
Right, right.
They might have been born there, but then they move to a surrounding area and grow up and live in like Hendersonville or something.
Right, right.
Columbia or Franklin. But you were born and raised in Nashville.
Born and raised in Nashville.
Davidson County.
Mm-hmm.
Home of the Grand Ole Opry.
Home of the Grand Ole Opry, yep.
And it had a profound impact on your life.
It did.
Well, it's going to be a dumb question to ask you what got you into music, because for God's sakes, you were born and raised in Nashville.
It doesn't hurt that I was born and raised in Nashville.
I think Music City might have had an impact on you.
Indeed, and I do have a bit of a family tie to music as
well.
Well,
let's get into it. Born in Nashville, and obviously music is in your family, so tell us about that.
So my grandfather moved to Nashville, I guess it was in the late 50s. He played with Flatt & Scruggs.
That's amazing.
Bluegrass band. And they all moved to actually over on Dickerson Road at the trailer park, which was high-end back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Not today so much. But,
no, not so much.
But they all moved to Nashville together so they could record and do those shows.
And I think the Ken Burns documentary on country music was a profound thing for a lot of us that thought we knew about country music. I was really impressed about how a lot of it kind of started in North Carolina and East Tennessee, mm-hmm. and then ended up kind of migrating into Nashville.
Right, and my grandfather,
he would have been a part of that,
because in East Tennessee,
it seemed like, yeah, it was like between the 30s and the 50s,
mm-hmm.
that the birth of what Nashville has become to be known today is kind of around that time frame of when it started. So he would have been a part of that.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's really cool.
It was. And that's what kind of brought him over this way. And then, you know, radio started changing around that time, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it made more sense for him to live in this, you know, in that area, so mm-hmm. as opposed to where they were at. So
very nice.
They all moved down that way. And so
great.
That's what got us in Nashville.
I see that. And so obviously you come from a musical family.
Mm-hmm, I do.
The whole family or just that side of it?
That side.
Okay.
So that's my dad's side of the family.
Okay.
So my grandfather, all my uncles, my dad, me, my kids play. So.
Okay, great.
So
we're
keeping it going. Yeah,
yeah, you are. Now the name Fiddler, like, is that real?
No, it's fake.
That's a fake.
That's
one.
A fake.
That's
one.
Your stage name.
That's my stage name.
Because I was gonna say, it's like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
To be doing the music you do and have that name, but
yeah, no, I chose something kind of.
I like it.
Off the wall. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds great.
It works.
Yeah. Jack Fiddler.
Yeah, yeah. And then when I, you know, bust the band out, we don't have a fiddle.
But you got to have a fiddle in the band.
Right. It gets people have some disappointed looks, but
that's good. So, tracing back to that, Flatt & Scruggs, I mean, come on, that's iconic,
yeah.
Legendary.
Yeah, they were rock stars back in the day.
Oh, absolutely.
And growing up around, you know, by the time I came around, mm-hmm. they had kind of split, and they'd gone with Lester had the Nashville Grass, mm-hmm. and then Earl had the Review, and my grandfather had already gone through both of those bands. And
oh, he did.
Yeah,
so he was kind of he went tug of war between.
He went
the
with
two.
One, then went with the other, and then he finally went out solo. And about, you know, about that time when I was born, he was actually
so
doing
I'm
solo
assuming
stuff.
He was in the photograph on that. Document all the documentaries.
He's in all that. He was on every record they cut from like 55 to 65. Or
see, a lot
like
of
that.
People don't look at the background players. I mean, musicians might, mm-hmm. because of inspiration or just the fandom aspect, but common everyday person isn't going to look at the photo. They're going to look at the picture of you know, Lester Flatt and be like, that's Lester Flatt. Right. And they don't look at the five other guys
in there that are awesome.
But he was a very much part of that band, mm-hmm. and the split, mm-hmm. and played with both of them.
Yeah, went
separately.
With one and then they went with the other. It's...
So what did he do, like, outside of that? Was he a session player or anything?
He played session work. He had his own solo mm-hmm. career where he would go out, and eventually he teamed up with Kenny Baker, who had originally played with Bill Monroe, mm-hmm. and they went out and had a little duo that they went out and did as well.
Pretty straightforward bluegrass and what back then was called hillbilly music.
Not really for him. Everybody around him was kind of doing that, and mm-hmm. he kind of had a little bluesy element to
okay.
his.
Okay, so did he get into like what they called the Nashville sound in the 50s, early 60s?
He was a big part of a lot of that influence.
Really?
When you hear all the dobro and everything mm-hmm. was kind of influenced on by, you know, by the way he played it.
That's fascinating.
And it was you can hear it today. Like if you listen to stuff today and you hear somebody playing the dobro, you'll hear some of those licks.
Right.
That it's still.
Well,
he,
of course,
did,
I mean, everybody nowadays thinks of Jerry Douglas when they think
right.
of the dobro because
right.
he's the Jimi Hendrix of the instrument. But your grandfather was a paving mm-hmm. way for that.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's remarkable.
Jerry met him when he was like 9, and got to sit with him and play. Mm. So
that's incredible.
It was neat to hear Jerry tell the
well,
story about when he met him.
Say again his name and where
oh,
can people look
so,
up everything.
So my grandfather's Uncle Josh Graves.
Okay.
And if you look it up, you'll find him everywhere.
Great.
He's got he's in the Hall of Fame up in Owensboro Bluegrass Hall of Fame.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's
so
fantastic.
There's a really cool exhibit up there. Go check that out.
Man, this is off to a grand start.
Yeah, we got some cool stuff.
Well, spawning off of your grandfather, who next in line?
Yeah, my dad.
Okay.
You know, of course, growing up, he played some with my grandfather
all
later
right.
on, and then he had like little country bands all through growing up. So
now this would have been
In the early '80s.
Early '80s. Okay.
Yeah. So he had previously in the late '70s, he had done a lot of stuff. He played with Ronnie that did Daytonas back in the, I guess it was the '60s. Little GTO. That's Ronnie the Daytonas.
Okay.
And then he played with the Compton Brothers and several things, and he kind of got out of it. He was in the military, but he had bands, you know, about the, I guess at the early '80s, he had some country bands, and I was always going around with him and
that's awesome.
Kind of listening to that and hanging out in the clubs and
yeah.
the studios and stuff.
So you grew up in it.
I did, and
I mean,
it's
been a part of your life since day
oh,
one.
Oh yeah,
which obviously would have been for him too.
Yeah, some of my fondest memories are like sitting in the like smoky clubs and like mm-hmm. you. It's kind of weird to think of a kid sitting in a club, but it was completely commonplace for me to be there.
Yeah, and you know, it's not unusual, especially to hear stories of kids like our generation that grew up in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't wear seat belts. We hung around people that smoked all the time. It was just the way life
yeah,
was.
Yeah,
you know?
And I enjoyed it. And some of my best memories are sitting in the studio or sitting in some of these little clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, they'd always kind of tuck me in somewhere in a booth somewhere in
right,
the back. And
right.
I'd get to sit there and hang out.
Exactly. So you watched this from birth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what came to you and sparked your interest in wanting to play an instrument, and when did that even begin?
I guess really as early as I can remember. I remember I was 4 years old, and they had this club in Hendersonville called Papa John's, not the pizza place. It's called Papa John's. And my
much
dad
better
had
than
some,
the pizza.
Oh, it was a cool place. And my 4-year old memory of it's probably not as accurate as it really is.
Probably a lot more vivid colors.
Oh, but yeah, I remember the lights and the audience and everything, and my dad would take me with him, and I'd be backstage, and they'd get me up and let me sing a song with them.
No kidding.
And so at you know, 4 years old, I was up on stage singing mm-hmm. John Anderson songs. So
that's great.
It kind of got me started, and you know, as you get older, you start, you know, trying to pick up an instrument. At 4, you really can't play an instrument.
No, I mean, you can try, but,
right,
I mean,
but,
obviously the super gifted ones that are the chosen one can do it. You know, obviously Marty Stewart's a great example of that. But
he was 9 though, or something.
He was 9, but still, he seemed like a
yeah.
small style because
yeah.
he just seemed like a small guy. You know,
Yeah,
but there's some virtuosos out there that start super young.
That's
but
true.
It seems to be more mandolin or fiddle or something of a smaller instrument, not a giant Gibson guitar, you know,
upright bass or something.
Yeah
exactly. So I didn't really start getting serious about playing until I was, you know, 12, 13 years old, and then when I was 14 was really kind of when I took off on.
But you were singing basically since.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And he'd hand me a mandolin and I'd chop away on it, you know, just not making any notes or anything.
Just a natural progression.
Yeah,
And obviously the bloodline connection. Though.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, I really truly believe that some families have that.
I do too.
It's a passed down thing that it's in your genes, it's in your blood, they say, and it's cool to meet someone like you that already right off the bat has that story, and to know that your grandfather was there when the world changed, and he was part of the change. He helped change that town and become what it is known today as, this mecca for musicians that seek the country bluegrass rooted way of music, Americana music.
Yep.
I mean, he was a part of that, and he was like a you know, leader. That's really neat.
Yeah, I love that history of it too.
Keeping the tradition alive.
Yeah.
So you start playing what, guitar at first or mandolin?
I started on guitar and I switched to bass pretty early.
Okay.
Played bass for several years before I picked up a guitar again. I probably played 3 years on bass before I ever played guitar again.
But it came natural.
Yeah, it came natural to me. And then once I got, you know, where I felt I was proficient on bass, I wanted to kind of branch out and play something else and move over to guitar and, you know, all the time picking up pianos and drums and, you know, everything else you can. And got a really cool opportunity to work for my uncle as an engineer at his studio.
Fantastic.
At the age of like 15.
Yep.
So
that's a good age, though.
Oh, and that's
make or break age. Do you want to take it serious? Or is it just something fun at the time, and then you discover other hobbies in life, or move into the professional world of wanting to be a doctor or something? You
right,
know?
Right.
So music is a calling thing, and I feel like there's that critical moment in life.
Yeah, and it's somewhere right in that age there, I think. So it was a good opportunity for me to do
You get
that.
Going, and was it strictly family involvement, or while you were in like high school and shit, did you like meet people?
Middle
school
and high school, I guess it was the typical. I'm sure you're probably the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, you put those bands together,
and they suck.
Oh man, we had two or three songs, and we could suck through them, and kind of get it going.
But it was the bliss of it, like pure joy of just making noise and having fun and owning an instrument. Like that's
absolutely
my guitar. I can paint it yellow and green and do whatever I want.
Absolutely. And I went through several of those in, you know, middle school. We had a couple, and then in high school I went through several bands as well. And we were playing rock and roll, you know, that was basically just all covers back. You know, that's what everybody does in high school, is just all
covers.
But
what did you grow up on? Obviously coming from a musical house and having that connection and family, you're around that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's so weird if you look at my personal music taste, it's based on my influences, but it's blues, it's country, it's rock and roll, it's heavy metal,
it's
hip hop, it's literally everything. And I just banged on your table.
You
like
didn't,
you said not
yeah,
to.
No, that's what the towel's for. But you didn't just say Hank Williams is it? I'm gonna do
no,
that.
I couldn't.
You were open minded.
Because
I think a lot of country people seem to have that one guy or artist that they worship the ground on,
and that's totally cool.
Bits and pieces of I like this guy and that band, but they always seem to just kind of almost mimic and go after the appeal of their favorite.
Right.
You know, you are more open-minded and broad spectrum. You let everything in.
Yeah, I have favorites. I don't know if that's going to be one of them or not. What you got there? Eight track.
Matt hands me an eight track of, is it Chuck Mangini? Feels So Good.
Oh.
It is a eight track cassette tape.
That's probably on sale if someone wants to come down here and grab
today. That's the real thing. Thanks, Matt.
And I am diverse.
For just a penny, huh?
But
that's
great. That's really.
It's a steal.
That's really digging deep right there. I was.
But you're a child of what? The 80s.
Yeah, I grew up in the 80s. Yeah. Okay.
So So you were part of the MTV generation.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember finally getting to see it when it came out, and it was interesting. They played music videos when I was a kid. So that was kind of cool.
You were getting family at home. Mm-hmm. You're getting bluegrass and this country and this Nashville thing, but then you're seeing what's going on in New York and LA and England.
Yeah,
and you're getting all the broad spectrum of rock, heavy metal, pop music. And so you really absorbed it like a sponge.
Absolutely. And people ask me, like, you know, who's one of your biggest influences? And I can name, you know, a dozen people who influenced me. But one of the ones that influenced the way I play guitar is Ace Frehley.
Really?
Kiss. And they're like, that's, you know, weird coming from your background. But, man, I just loved, I loved the way he played. I loved the way that he entertained.
I
wanted to emulate that.
I mean, it's so many people can say that, especially the kids that grew up, the kids that were teenagers in the 70s when Kiss came out, they all say that.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it's hard not to.
And their showmanship was something that really appealed to me too. That if I could do a show half as good as what they put out, I'd be satisfied.
Well, you gotta wear makeup,
right?
That's blood fire,
yeah,
spit blood,
burn my beard off, and all that. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense to me though, because that shows the difference of generation.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't a one-trick pony and followed in the footsteps of what they did and just stuck to country. You let it all kind of come in, and you actually dabbled in all of those worlds.
I have, yeah. I've played all of it, too, mm-hmm. just, you know, time.
So has that led to where you are to this very day, that you're still kind of...
I think it is.
...broad spectrum of different sounds and textures, but yet you found a sound that works and fits... And every song isn't necessarily the same, but they belong in the same world.
That's how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. That's what I tell everybody, at least. The genre that appeals to me most, as far as if you want to describe what I'm doing, is Americana.
Okay.
Because Americana is taking a lot of elements of blues, of country, of rock and roll, and throwing them all together. And you can be a bluesy Americana artist, a country Americana artist, a rock and roll Americana artist, or you can do like I do and just do whatever you want.
Right, I think a lot of people get mixed up with the idea that Americana is like folk.
It
can be, and it can fall in that category, I think, because of the acoustics aspect. But when you have an Americana band with a drummer that's got swing on the ride cymbal, and his beats can be very open but yet solid, to me, that's jazz.
Yeah.
And so you can have a jazz feel drummer playing back behind an acoustic guitar doing simple chord progressions and reminiscence of like old blues or folk music or even old country music. And when you put those two things together, it can work beautifully. But to me, that's where the word Americana fits, is it is a melting pot.
Right, and that's what I like about it, because it takes everything that I remember growing up and everything that influenced me later on, and I can do any bit of that, and I can put it all into different songs. And
right. So you do random things throughout school age era, high school and all that.
Right.
As you come out of high school and older, what were you kind of putting your thumb on, saying, I'm going to do this and I'm going to go this direction?
I was trying to lean towards the countryside at that point, because that seemed to be the natural progression in the Nashville area. It didn't really what didn't fit me 100%.
Yeah, Nashville's
a little too...
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know, it changes almost monthly in a way, but I lived and worked there during the time of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yeah.
And when that happened, it was like there was this vibe of people are like, okay, great, Faith Hill and all this pop stuff's going to disappear and it's going to be replaced with Alison Krauss and all this original... country, bluegrass, Americana, that's going to become the new thing, because that movie may have been successful, but that soundtrack was beyond successful. And I don't know if you picked up on that being down there. And
I did. I
noticed.
Seeing
the changes of growing up and everything.
And I think it really did help. Of course, you're not going to replace, you know, those big name artists.
The big monster.
Yeah, you're not going to replace that. It just doesn't work like that. But
some executive said, well, I'm glad that's successful, but I still think the kids want to hear.
Yeah, and then they'll put that out.
The pop record.
And they'll throw the pop out there until you just can't stand it anymore.
But it seemed like there was a good chunk of time, like between, like, late 90s and early 2000s mm-hmm. where there was a bit of an earthquake.
There
and
was
you would have been
a resurgence.
The perfect age of that.
Yeah, there
right?
was a resurgence, and it got real bluegrassy there for a minute, too.
It did.
And I got a lot of gigs.
The station inn, like,
oh,
all
yeah.
of a sudden become, like, a world-famous place. And I used to drive by there on a Saturday night, and there'd be four cars in the parking lot.
Right.
Next thing I know, I couldn't drive down 12th Avenue because there's a line wrapped around the station inn to get in. And so... That was what happened.
And that is. And the Station Inn, I remember I'd been going there since I was a kid. You mm-hmm. know, my grandfather always played there. And I'd
That's great.
Been going there since I was a kid. And then, you know, in the late 90s, I started playing there. Mm-hmm. And I've got pictures of me playing there with my grandfather and everything. It's awesome.
That's so
and then,
cool.
then all of a sudden, it was cool to play the Station Inn. I'm like, man, I've been playing there for years. And then like, all of a sudden, it was cool to play there. So
that's the trend.
But I was in on it at that point. So.
Yeah. But that's good. Again, that shows a lot about Nashville. The highs, the lows.
Right.
It's very much a roller coaster.
And it's still a cool place, by the way.
It is. It's gotten massive, but I can still get through the town like I could back then. But
yeah.
even though I don't like go down as much as I used to, but I do.
Yeah.
You know, and when I do, I still enjoy it. But it's a great city. I love it. I can
yeah.
see why so many people, even big mega stars, legends from Los Angeles and New York have moved to Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't bat an eye at a celebrity. It's not
That's
as,
the best part, I think, for them.
Yeah, it's not a big deal to live there. And I mean, I love to tell a story. One day I was in line to get lunch at Nashville,
mm-hmm.
and Sheryl Crow was standing behind me, and nobody cared. Like, it was just... Hey, there's Sheryl Crow. She's
now give me some lunch.
And that's, again, that shows a lot about the times were changing. She had
yeah.
ditched L.A. and come to Nashville,
yeah.
and all these other people started doing it. So it's just, it was common to see not only Marty Stewart and Kenny Rogers out walking the street, but you could see these mega rock stars all of a sudden come into town.
And it's still like that.
It is now,
which is pretty cool, and everybody's kind of low-key about it.
Yeah.
No one's you know,
just,
super crazy.
It's just a different vibe.
Yeah, it is, know? And I really like that
no
about
paparazzi.
It. Yeah, none of that.
Although they might be there hiding in the bushes on Music Row.
Possibly.
I don't know. So you're doing a lot of cool stuff growing up.
Yeah.
And once you got out of high school, did you form a band? Did you just play in whatever came your way?
I kind of just went and played with whoever at that point because I thought I was going to find some. I was looking for somebody that was going to be the thing. Yeah, I was looking for the thing that was, you know, the sound that was going to be the next sound.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was coming at some point.
Yeah.
And I was looking for that, and I would you know work with somebody for a while to see if that was going to be, you know, where I was going to end up.
So you did
at.
A lot of testing.
Yeah. Way more testing than probably
Didn't
necessary.
Stay focused on one thing for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, and I'd get in with somebody for a while, and it seemed like it's going good. And as stuff always goes, you know, things fall apart and things don't work out, and that's okay too. It's you know part of the ride is
yeah.
the journey to it. So you know,
yeah.
I probably did I don't know maybe a dozen in you know 5 years even just picking up little bits and pieces here and there.
No, so. I get it. I mean, it was a strange town to try and be a drummer in.
Oh yeah,
like to me that was like. Nobody really needed you, but, you know, if they did, you know, you'd get the call.
Yeah.
But that must have been a trip, man, to grow up in that realm of what your family history was and to see all that and be a part of it, but then to try and branch out on your own and do your own thing at the same time.
Yeah.
You were kind of in two different worlds.
And that was hard, too, and that's kind of the reason, you know, I know you asked if Fiddler is my real last name. And that's actually the reason I did it. I was like, when I finally decided that I wasn't looking for someone to be the front person anymore. I was going to put together what I wanted to do. I'm going to sing the songs that I wrote. I was like, I'm going to make up my own name.
Right.
And I'm going to kind of not separate myself from it, but just kind of go on a different path.
Right, because it's a known fact that if you're connected, related to someone that was even slightly famous, some people will milk that cow
mm-hmm.
just right to where it will open up some doors. In your case, you're saying that you were like, I could have done that, but I'm not going to.
That's the
I'm going to
plan.
Cut out my own path and do my own thing and build my own, you know, world of music and
yep.
not just use the coattails of my grandfather or my father or the people they know
right.
to an advantage.
Exactly, and that's what I kind of decided
great.
To do. So
very bold thing. I think a lot of people would probably choose the other path.
I think a lot of people have, and that's okay too. I'm not bashing it in any shape or fashion.
Some,
but
some
like,
handle it well, and some don't. They just immediately bust in the door and go, "Don't you know who I am?"
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know,
that's always fun.
So I keep it low key and just try to let the music do something and let people hear that. And
well, what did the music bring to you out of all this time frame of your life?
Heartaches. No, that time period was rough. Just trying to figure out where I could, who I could play with, like, and what I could do.
You're in your 20s. And you're still kind of becoming an adult.
Trying to do all that and trying to have a day job too at the same time, because a good piece of advice my grandfather gave me when I told him I wanted to play music, because it was natural. I think all of us in the family did it at some point. He told me, he said, "Get you something that you can pay bills with every week."
Yeah.
He said, "And then play you some music." And I was doing both, and that was the hard part, was trying to find the balance between, working a 9-to-5, quote unquote, and then still having time to.
Did you work in the music field?
No,
you did not.
No, I did a little bit, but mostly I didn't.
See, I'm always surprised when I meet people down there that have a decent paying job, but it's just something anybody could do,
right?
Like being a waiter. That's a common thing,
right?
Every musician in Nashville. You want to find a new guitar player for your band, you go to the local, Ruby Tuesdays and order something and say, "Oh, hey, do you play
guitar?" Yeah, you can find one that way.
It's true.
Shake a tree, see if one falls out.
It's very true. But in your case, or other people get jobs at, like, music stores.
Right.
And so that's a common thing.
Yeah, I've seen that quite a bit. And
Guitar Center or some of the smaller places down there. But you chose to get just a regular, everyday job.
Yeah, I just did something different, and then wanted to see what I could do, kind of separate it, kind of like not a secret life, but like an alter ego or something, I guess. I don't know.
So what came your way?
Well, the best thing that came my way, it's, I don't know how many years ago it's been. Math's not my thing.
There you go.
No math questions.
Good old math.
But I got hooked up with some songwriters and really found that I had a lot of things I wanted to write about, and that really was what really sparked me into what I'm doing right now.
Okay.
So I've been doing kind of on this path here probably 8 years or so now, where I've started really writing my own material and working. I was working with several different groups trying to kick something going, and I had several of them kind of fizz out or whatever, and kind of kicked me in the butt to motivate myself. And I was like, well, if you want to do something right, you should do it yourself.
Right.
And so I started doing it myself.
Okay.
And so, put my own band together.
So what was the first band you could say that you were in? And was it all Nashville-based bands, or did you make your way up to this area at some point?
Well, if you want to go all the way back, I remember the first band I was in. I want to take it back here to,
do it.
Golly, like 92.
Okay.
It's called the Dysfunctional Turds.
It was a
alternative punk grungy kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was great. And that was a great band experience.
Yeah.
We played 2 or 3 shows ever.
Yeah.
Had a lot of practices and, more practices
more
than
practice
shows.
More practices than shows. Yeah.
But that's what, that was the first one. And then there's been so many in between here and there. But
nothing really stuck.
Nothing
just
was
kind of in and out.
Yeah, in and out. Nothing stuck long enough for me to.
So what would be the first major band you got in that actually worked hard, did things, and what year would that have been?
Oh, honestly, it was very recently, probably just a couple years ago. Drive-In Romance.
Yes. I was telling you before we started rolling. I remember catching that name, and I think you played somewhere around either Bowling Green or maybe Franklin or something like that. But I remembered that name; it stuck out and it rang a bell. I thought that was a cool name.
That was really cool time, because that was taking songs that I had written and songs that other people had written, and we were doing our own stuff, no covers, just heartfelt music and trying to get it out. And it was really good. It didn't work out. They're still rolling. And
they are.
They're still doing good.
Okay.
I'm glad to.
So you exited the band.
I did. I exited, and really I exited because I wanted to do my own thing at that point. I realized that
it's a juggle, man.
Yeah,
to
it's
get
not,
in something
it's not
like
that,
that
I don't play well with others, but I was trying to, my mind was somewhere different.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go there.
It's hard to explain, but I've been in that boat, and people I've worked with have been in that boat. So it's an understandable thing, but the hard thing is it just sucks. It sucks when it doesn't pan out, because you feel like you're on the same page and everybody's got the same ideals and goals of seeing this band do things, you know.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there might be one person that's like, eh, I want to do this other thing.
Yeah, so. And that's you know, it's like as much as I was enjoying what we were doing, I was like, there's something else that I want to be doing.
Still and felt like something was missing.
Something slightly different that I want to do. And
now, would that be a Nashville-based band?
Yeah, we'll call it a Nashville-based band.
Okay,
yeah.
But you would consider that to have been part of this music scene?
Absolutely.
Because, again, when we say Bowling Green music scene, we're talking about not only the city of Bowling Green, but a good about 60-mile radius, give or take,
and that,
maybe
100-mile
radius.
I've played Bowling Green. I've played, you know, Glasgow. Is Glasgow a surrounding area, I would assume?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's our sister city.
I love it. And I've played all these places, and honestly, I get the best reception outside of Nashville.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
It is. I love Nashville. Don't get me wrong.
We all do.
But
it's a fickle town.
Yeah. I can get out there and I can do really well if I sing Friends in Low Places, I'll get people to clap for me.
Exactly.
If I sing one of mine, then maybe.
The big thing is down there, every time I walk up and down Broadway now, every single band is playing Fishing in the Dark.
Oh, that's a hot one right now.
But why now? I mean,
it was cool back then to me, but you know.
But it disappeared, and now all of a sudden every band on Broadway is like, hey,
let's do Fishing in the Dark. Yeah.
All at the same, everybody at 8 o'clock started playing it.
They get synchronized watches and they're like, it's time to get down to the nitty gritty, and they get going. I love playing down there, but just when I play my songs, it's
right.
It's like, well, that's cool, but can you play some Garth Brooks? I'm like, yeah, I can play you some Garth Brooks, but
to play originals in a city like that, you have to be at a songwriter's round or a session that is actually respected. Like, people actually go to these things wanting to hear original songs.
Yes.
And the venue promotes it that way. It becomes... and, of course, we can all point to the Bluebird because that's what it's known for.
Right.
And I think there's so many... The town is just literally saturated with these things, but so many venues and bars that we don't even know the names of have open mics or songwriter nights and all that stuff, and they're usually in the week, Wednesday night, Thursday night.
I've been lucky to play a few of those that I consider maybe some of the better ones. The Bluebird's obviously one of the good ones. I've gotten to play Belcourt Taps.
Oh yeah,
and I don't know if you've seen that one, but that one's super cool.
Yep,
I get to play it again at the end of this month. So
great,
I'm very excited about that. And they really are open to whatever I want to sing.
They are, because if it's a respected venue and a respected event that people actually have anticipation of hearing good things, you know, the A&R people go, or the songwriter scouts go out and look for the next song that, you know, I don't even know who to say at this point. I'm going to say old people because I don't know any modern country people, but they're going to be like, hey, Clint Black should record that song.
Right, exactly.
So, whoever the modern day Clint Black is.
Yeah, the modern day Clint Black should record this.
maybe Clint Black himself will record it. But I mean, that's kind of how Nashville's worked for many years now, especially in the, I'd say in the starting of the, at least the 70s.
Yeah.
Now, you had the songwriters in the buildings that were getting paid by the record companies to write songs. But then it became this thing where the songwriters were going out looking for songs. And then they would bring these people in and say, hey, let me help you finish that and make it better, and I'll pitch it to so-and-so. So it's an interesting thing. But if the venue's respected and the place that puts it on is got a reputation of having great talent with booking great people,
good things
can come that out of
that. That's what I enjoyed. I did a couple different ones. The Belcourt was the last one that I played.
That's
cool. And everyone there knew what they were there for, and they were ready to hear new original music.
Enjoyed
and
they it, were applauded.
They were listening to my songs and responding to my songs.
What? They weren't watching TV and talking? That's amazing.
You know, I've played a lot of open mics and things like that where people are there to drink and have a good time, which is totally fine. But at this one, they were there to hear some music, and it was cool.
It's just weird how things like that are.
Yeah,
a city of that magnitude with all the different things and the reputation it has, they all have their different little quirks and personalities about them too. So, but that's cool. You are involved in that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I actually
enjoy.
Good
outlet too, right?
Yeah, it is.
Instead of playing them at home, you get to go out and test them.
I get a little test before I, you know, do the full band mm-hmm. thing, which is nice. I write all my songs for a full band,
right?
But it's nice to kind of just pitch a song and see, is like, is this working or is this not working?
True songwriter.
Yeah, and try to see what happens with it. So.
So you've been doing that for what you said about 8 years solid at this point?
Yeah, I've been solid writing for eight years now, and I'd like to think all my songs are cool.
They are.
Thank you. I try not to, because somebody told me one time, just write all the songs that you come up with. And I was mm-hmm. like, boy, that sounds like a lot of waste right there.
It does, and I fall on that boat too. I feel like everything that I write needs to be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm at the point where it's like, well, maybe not everything.
I've gotten now where if I write something, I want it to be of a certain level that I could, that it's worthy to be played out. And that's kind of like where I've tried to take my writing at this point. Is trying to put myself there. Every now and again, I'll come up with something dumb, and I've got a few dumb songs.
Don't we all?
Man, and I don't want to call it dumb. I have this song. I wrote a song about my hat. I love my hat.
I don't blame you. It's a nice hat.
Thank you. And when my son was little, they had the Teletubbies, and they had this Teletubby. here it comes. And this one had this hat, and he would walk around going, hat, hat, hat. And I was like, that'd be funny if you had a song where you just said hat the whole time.
And there it is.
And here I go. I put together a bluesy shuffle. And, you know, EAB, ain't nothing to it. And I write this song about my hat. It's got real legitimate verses.
Right.
But on the chorus, it's just like hat, hat, hat. And I wrote it. I kind of put it in the back of my mind. Didn't think much of it.
Yeah.
And I'm at a show. We're playing outdoor at a craft fair kind of thing. It's a fundraiser. And I felt like no one was listening to my music because they were doing other things. They were eating. They were buying things.
Making crafts.
Right. And I felt like maybe people weren't paying attention. So I wasn't frustrated, but I was just a little frustrated.
Yeah, test it.
And I looked over. I said, "Fellas, we're gonna do the hat song." And I get a bunch of no head shakes. Yeah. I'm like, "Nope, we're doing it." I start playing it, and I look up, and people are paying attention to it.
And that tells you everything you need to know about the music business.
There it is. It's the end right there.
The one song you doubt and think is the dumbest is the one most people will go, "I really like that song."
I had people dancing. I had people come up to me after I came off the stage and tell me how much they enjoyed my hat song.
Yep.
I'm like, did you hear the other songs that were, you know, heartfelt that I wrote about serious times in my life?
I was busy.
Oh, I don't know, but I heard the hat song. But, you know, so you just never know what's going to appeal.
I mean, that's just common sense, you know.
Yeah,
simplicity of things, you know, the childish type of things, you know.
Yeah.
That resonates, you know. The kid inside you will laugh at that or sing along with it, and it's catchy.
Yeah, and you put a bluesy shuffle and it makes people just want to move.
Great music to anything that's catchy will always be catchy.
Yeah,
because they're always going to remember the words.
Yeah, especially if there's only one word to remember. Hat.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so that's all you got to do.
But you're still kind of all over the map about your writing. It's not all comedy.
Right, yeah.
You do have serious
stuff. I got some serious stuff.
So, again, go back to the band that you were in. You get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your next endeavor?
I sat down with some of those songs that I had, and I was like, these songs right here, you know, I got five or six mm-hmm. that I feel really, really strongly about. I want to do these songs. I want to put together a show where I can do my stuff
mm-hmm.
and get out in front of people and let them hear these songs and see what they think about them.
Right.
And at that point, it was that was a natural progression to do that. And I always thought someone else was the front person.
Mm.
I never wanted to be the front person,
right.
And never really was the front person.
And it just kind of dawned on you that you were going to have to be.
Right. And I'm actually good at it. It's weird. A friend of mine told me some really good advice. He said, whoever you are on stage, you should be that person off stage. That way, when you get off stage, you don't have to fake it. And I'm like, well, that's good news for me because I am weird on stage and weird off stage. So nobody has to worry about thinking I'm fake because I get up there and say weird stuff. And I'm like, oh, man. But people are receptive to it.
Yeah.
And I had a couple gigs, you know, one of the first things that I did with the band that I have now, we did a benefit in White House, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the MC for the night for the whole program, and then my band was like at the end. And the whole night, I didn't know how to be an MC. I got up there and just said whatever I felt like saying,
mm-hmm.
and people thought it was funny and they enjoyed it. And I was like, wow, I guess I really do know how to do this. And I get up there and, you know, knock my songs out, and everybody comes up and says, great. I'm like, okay, maybe I can be a front person. It's just a I just never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some things just happen naturally.
Yeah, and that's what
so that's what's happened.
That's what's you. That's what's happened with me. Yeah.
So you leave a band that's doing fairly well, mm-hmm. and you have some songs, and this is the kind of the path you just went out and ventured out and see yeah. to see what happens, and that's what happened.
That was it. I put together a 3-piece band. And
right, and it is the.
The Jack Fiddler Band.
That's it.
Well, and I started putting it together, I've got my members, and I said, well, we're going to call it. Because I was already using the Jack Fiddler name at mm-hmm. that point, but it wasn't the Jack Fiddler Band. It was just, that was just simply the name I was using, right. the stage name at the time. And I was like, well, we're going to call it. And I had just kind of jokingly said the Jack Fiddler Band, mm-hmm. kind of, and it was like, yeah, that's cool.
I'm now, like, why, before we go further, I have to ask, because even it tripped me up a little bit. You want to say Jake.
Right, right.
Because it's no E.
Yeah,
you spell it J-A-K.
Yeah.
But it's Jack.
Yeah.
Now, why did you go with that? Just because
the spelling?
Stage name and all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah. it's just alternate
spelling. Because, see, I changed mine to 2 E's.
Yeah.
For the whole Captain Dean thing, and it was like, well, it looks cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, the only downside is people don't know how to pronounce it until they hear it.
I know, because I tripped over it when I got here, but I mean, I was like, I just want to make sure I get it right.
Yeah, yeah, and I just thought it'd be different and kind of, you know, a regular name that mm-hmm. people could remember, but just spell it a little different, just to put a little spin on it.
I like it.
So, yeah, and you know, I was just like, I said the Jack Fiddler Band, and it stuck. And at this point, it's I guess it's going to stay that
so
way.
So how long has this been going?
About a year now, I guess.
That's it?
Yeah.
Now, was there something in between the romance? What was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there
I
was...
forget the whole yeah,
drive
name.
In, Drive-In Romance.
Drive-In Romance, okay.
Yeah, I worked a little while with Final Approach.
Okay. Where were they based out of?
They were in Portland, Tennessee.
Portland, yeah. Okay.
And played bass with them, did a few shows. Mm-hmm. And that lasted probably... Six to eight months.
Oh wow! Very brief.
Yeah, it was just a brief stint, and that whole time I was just writing songs and thinking about what I wanted to do.
Right.
But
and now you're doing it.
Now I'm doing it. Yeah. So.
So you've been in this band or your band technically for about a year or so mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
I know that you come up to Bowling Green area on occasion, mm-hmm. and you will frequent Nancy and Eddie's
yes.
Plug and Play.
Yes.
And anyone that knows Nancy. And Eddie, of course, they are very easy to spot. They go to a lot of shows. They're very supportive of this music scene. But Nancy is one of the most passionate music fans that I've ever met. And she has a wonderful story about how she wanted desperately to play music and taught herself how to play guitar at a later age in life. And they do so much for... so many of us in support, but then they also in their own property have this little performance venue mm-hmm. and I've played concerts at their house
yeah.
like but they have the open stage plug and play events and everything, and I've noticed that you frequent quite a bit of those.
I do. I met Nancy maybe 3 or 4 years ago mm-hmm. at an open mic in Franklin, Kentucky.
Okay.
And just it was a Facebook friend request after right. that, and just kind of getting and I got an invite to do it. And
I mean, she would go to just about anything open mic related to yeah. perform, mm-hmm. but she's also a very skilled photographer.
Yeah, and that's
and she would take pictures of the other performers and upload them and tag you in them and stuff. So Nancy's just a weapon. She's the Swiss Army knife.
It's amazing if. The world needs more people yeah. like Nancy and Eddie, especially the music world. They do more for this area's music scene, and anybody that plays music that mm-hmm. they're you know that they get behind, they do more for them than anybody, and they're the best kind of people.
Yep.
Just you couldn't ask for something better than
that's
that.
True.
And I love going to their place, and I've said that no matter where I end up going, you know, with my music, I'll always go back and play at Nancy and Eddie's place.
Mm-hmm. I can see that because it's a welcoming environment.
Mm-hmm.
They love to just have an entire day where it's an open stage. Just show up if you want to sing a song or two, if you want to jam with other people, if you want to bring your entire band and say, hey, we're going to play our set.
Yeah, you can do it.
They'll give you the spot because she's very fair about making sure everyone that comes
yeah.
gets their moment and gets to perform. And
it's
like
and it's so hard to find people who are so selfless. They don't want anything in return except for to hear and enjoy the music and help support, you know, other musicians. I'm like,
right.
wow, that's just you don't get that very often.
No. But anyone listening to this, I don't think their names have been mentioned much, but Nancy and Eddie, Plug and Play, it's easy to find on Facebook. Pretty regular event. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're monthly at this point, but they do seem to be fairly often, in common. But I've noticed that you frequent those quite a bit.
And I do.
So
and
that's really cool.
And, you know, from the first time I went, they were supportive of me and my songs and my music.
Right.
And they've came out to several of my shows. Mm-hmm. I've done some solo acoustic stuff they've came out to, and they've seen my full band shows.
Right. Now, mentioning the full band again, you're a trio.
Yes.
And it is you on lead vocals and guitar,
yes.
correct? Now,
yes.
who else is in the band?
Oh, man. So this is cool. So let me talk about the drummer first.
Yes.
This dude's been playing drums since he was like four, banging on pots and pans. And I don't know how I was lucky to find this guy, but he's amazing. His name's Jonathan Robson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't call anybody by their regular name, though, so I call him J Banger. It makes sense to me.
It does make sense.
And he kicks that kick drum like a mule.
Nice.
And I've never heard anybody
so
play like him.
Backwards?
Just about, yeah. It's unreal. I've played places they're like, just mic the kick. I'm like, nope, you don't got to do that.
Yeah.
Just let it ride. It's good.
There you go.
But I met him probably 2.5-3 years ago.
Okay.
Met him through Drive-In Romance.
All right.
And when I took off and started kind of doing the Jack Fiddler Band thing, I went with someone else initially, and that didn't work out. And I was needing somebody, and he was out there, and I was like, hey, come play with me.
Yeah. Let's check it out.
This is I know that we're gonna play together. Mm-hmm. Like you know what I mean. You meet somebody like I know this is gonna work.
Yeah.
So
trust me.
yeah. And it's been good. And we're so tight. And it's
good.
I love it when I don't have to look at somebody and tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. They already know what we're doing.
Right.
It's already happening.
Now is he from Tennessee?
He's from Madison.
Oh, Madison.
Madison
okay.
area. So just North Nashville.
Yep.
Still Davidson County. So that's where he's from. And
Madison's got a lot of music history that people don't know about.
That's where all the stars moved to after they left Nashville. My grandfather ended up in Madison.
They all had like offices there. Like a lot of people don't realize that the Elvis Presley's manager, the world famous Colonel Tom Parker, his office was in Madison, Tennessee.
Yeah, Madison was a
so that was home base for him. And he didn't really have to go to Memphis and deal with all that. Like he handled everything in Nashville, took care of the recording sessions, and handled Elvis's career out on a phone and a typewriter in an office in Madison, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And there's a billion other stories like that.
Exactly.
There's so many offices in that part.
Yeah, there's still, to this day, there's still a lot of that stuff going on in that area. So,
yep.
So he was right amongst it.
Good.
And so
probably another strong background in music too.
Yeah, and he's a super asset to the band.
Yeah,
and then
better than being a super ass.
That's right. And then that's my job in the band. And then my bass player is actually my son.
Now I thought this because I've seen photos, of course, of you guys, and I thought that was probably the case because it was like, I wonder if that's his kid.
Yeah, it is. And
that's cool.
He is actually the real musical genius of the family.
How about that?
So
that's fourth generation.
Fourth generation. Let me back it up to the first generation now.
Yeah.
My grandfather had perfect pitch, which if anybody doesn't know what that is, if you hear a note, you know what it is.
Yeah.
They can also reverse. They can sing a
note. Kind of like when a blender is turned on to make a milkshake, you can go, that's C major.
Right,
like
right.
I've met people that do that. It's freaky.
Yeah, it is. It's very uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather had it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it. My dad doesn't have it. I wish I had it.
My
son has it. Didn't even know it was a thing. He didn't know it was special.
Just thought it was.
He thought everybody knew how to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell this embarrassing story on him. It's really not embarrassing. It's amazing.
It's actually pretty cool.
John Mayer had covered "The Breeze" by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this is really cool. It was a neat version
right.
of it. And I was like, hey, you got to listen to this. So he's like, I was like, wait a minute, have you heard the original? And you know, as you're coming up, you gotta back yourself up and learn all the classics. And to this day, I'm still like, oh, have you heard this? And he's like, no. I was like, well, you need to hear this because it's a key cut.
It's very important.
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, well, you need to hear the original, the Lynyrd Skynyrd version of "The Breeze" before you hear John Mayer's version. So we back it up. I turn it on. I'm playing it for him. I'm like, what do you think about it? He goes, it's cool. Kind of like a little southern rock song in the key of G flat. And I kind of get a weird look on my face, and I'm looking down at my phone, wondering if it maybe has the key written on the phone for the, you know, on the YouTube that I was looking at. And I was like, how'd you know it's in G flat? He's like, because it's in G flat. So at this point, I'm grabbing a guitar to see if it's really in G flat, and it is. And I stop, and I'm like, so do you know what key all songs are in? He's like, yeah, don't you? I'm like, no, that's not how this works.
Did he ever have, like, classes or taught anything?
No.
No piano lessons or nothing?
No, he had started playing bass. Just wow. You know, he just started off. And I was like, so what if I asked you just to sing a note out loud? If I said sing a C, could you sing a C? He's like, I don't know. I think I could. So I said, well, give it a try. He sings out a C. I get the guitar, and I'm checking it. And I was like, okay. Turn around backwards. Can you sing a G flat? Let's not do, you know, standard notes. All of them.
It's like he put everything down there.
And I'm like,
wait a minute.
I'm testing this whole theory. And he's looking at me. He goes, can't everybody do this?
And you're like, no.
No, sorry, dude. That's not
your great grandfather.
But that's about it. So,
wow. That's really impressive.
So he's the real musical genius of the family. He's actually going to college right now for audio engineering.
Wow.
So
he's at
Ball State right now.
Oh, Ball State.
Yeah, he's at Ball State right now. He's got a scholarship. So
fantastic. Seems like a lot. There's a thing at MTSU, I believe, and I know that Belmont is known for like a music course. So
yeah, he got accepted at Belmont too.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's 46 G's a year. So.
You know.
Right. What's that?
You'll sell enough records to pay that off. Right?
Yeah, exactly. But so he started playing bass when he was about 15 years old.
Okay. Good age.
And I should have known. I should have known he was special, because all of a sudden he went from, you know, doing the 1/5 to, you know, playing like Flea. And I should have known something
you
was up.
Yeah. How'd you miss that?
Yeah, I don't know how I missed that, but he went from 0 to 100 really, really fast. Nice. And as I will put him anywhere against anybody standing in. And the thing is you don't have to tell him how to play it, because
right.
he can hear it. And
just knows.
It's freaky.
So you don't even have to do anything.
No. I was like,
write a song.
I'd be like, hey, it's in this key. If you care. If you don't, already know what it is. So he plays bass for me, and he's found this way to play where it is. I'm pretty sure you work as a 3-piece too, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
As you know,
it's the preferred way, because it's less babysitting when you.
That's what I said. That's what I said.
You make more money, and you don't have to call 5 people.
Yeah, you just got to call 2 people.
Yeah, 2 people.
And one of them I could holler across the house and.
Well, I mean, I grew up. I was a big fan of Primus. I loved Cream, like Rush, all these bands that were 3-pieces. I always thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, a lot of the pop punk stuff that came out, there were a lot of 3-piece bands in that. So I loved MXPX and Blink-182, and everybody was a trio. And I just thought, if I'm going to be in a band, I'd prefer to be in a trio. And I've kind of kept that motto for all these years. So.
Yeah, it seems to work, and the trick.
But it seems
to
work
is,
for you, because it's your son and a guy that you were meant to be almost by fate work with on drumming. So it seems like this band
came to you. This is what I've been looking for.
Yeah,
that whole time I've been looking for that.
And when you stopped looking, it came to
you.
And one was there the whole
time. Yeah, one's been sitting there in the out in the garage, perfect pitch, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah. That's
so
great.
But it's cool playing as a 3-piece, because you learn that every piece is super important too. Mm-hmm. Because if one of you stops, there's a whole you know,
that's the other joy of it. I think
you have a lot of
freedom to be a little more open about what you're playing. You don't have to just hold one thing because someone else has got your back. It's kind of like you can juggle.
Yeah,
and I like that.
And that's what I really really enjoyed about it.
So this band as a band unit has been solid for all this time.
Yes.
And that's what'd you say earlier
we're on a year right now, about a year total.
What have you done since that? Have you recorded, put out anything? Have you done a lot of shows?
We did quite a few shows total with my solo stuff and everything. I think I did 50 shows last year.
Nice.
And still worked, which is fun.
It's good. But you're smart. You can do it.
Yeah,
You figured out the formula.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the trick, is just find out when you can and when you can't.
Exactly.
But we put that together, and we play a lot of shows. We've got a lot of material, and at this point, we've been talking over the past couple weeks. About mid December, I said, hey, let's knock off and not play anything for the rest of the month. And take a break. I normally play New Year's Eve shows, and I didn't play one this year.
We did the exact same thing,
and I was like, it's kind of nice just to chill out.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's start talking about this album that we want to put out. And we're gonna record this album and put this stuff, put these songs to, you know.
So what's the plan, and how many songs you think you're gonna put on it?
Man, I want to put them all out, but yeah. you can
limit it.
Yeah,
you can do a full album or EP or what's your plan?
I think we're gonna go EP.
Okay, so 2020 should see some recordings. Yeah, see the light of day. At some point that should.
And with my previous experience, I want to do it myself.
Yeah.
So I'm just going
to
go.
It seems to be the way most people are
going.
Yeah,
it really is. And then, you know, with you know, T going to school for audio engineering, it just makes sense to let him mix it.
Yeah.
And then hand it back to me, let me master it, so I can put my hand on it.
What
one more
better
time.
Way to hands on, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, but he's in school for it, so I might as well let him mix it.
Yeah,
master
I would say
it,
that's a great move.
Yeah. So I'm hoping probably say, like, you know, June, July, have something ready to, you know, start putting out.
Good deal. So summer 2020.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. And I want to do, you know, I still want to do hard copy stuff. I'm a big fan of, that's like, you know, this place right here, they have records.
Yes.
There's nothing like a record in your hand.
Nope.
Digital downloads are cool for certain times, but
I like what bands are doing now, and we did it with ours. We put it out digitally first, and that way all the people that are like wanting it so desperately to upload on a phone and stuff, it's like, here.
Yeah.
But then a month later it came out in hard copy, and the true fans,
yeah, they get
went
the real
and
version.
Got it and bought it and everything, and they like to hold it in their hand and look at the artwork and read the insides.
Yeah.
That's kind of the modern day that we're in, you know.
Yeah.
So at least you can still do both, you know.
Yeah.
Not a complete loss.
Right, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I actually want to have, you know, vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, and of course CDs and stuff like that too,
yep.
But the vinyl's important to me.
That's
to get
a big
those.
Goal. Yeah, a lot of people have that. And it seems more within reach, I think, now than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And of course one of the biggest album producers in the world is right down the street in Nashville, Tennessee, so pretty easy to go down the road and like physically inspect it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, check out the master and see the artwork and everything.
And the affordability on it is so much better than it used to be too.
Oh, yeah.
You can record, you know, one piece of equipment, you know,
yep.
back in the 90s was crazy amount of money.
It was.
You could buy a whole studio for that now, just about.
I know. I think back to that stuff. I'm like, man, I was paying more for studio time back then for an ADAT tape.
Right.
And now I can just upload it to a thumb drive, and it's like for free.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely changed, but that's a good change, I think.
It is.
Especially for the music scene. If you get
some things in music have been good, and I would say one of them has been the technology side of the production side of everything, and so that's cool. It's and I like the fact that you can be more hands-on. The artist can actually make it from start to finish.
That's the best part, because then you're getting really what their vision was.
Yeah,
hopefully as close to the vision as you can.
Yep.
By letting them be that hands-on.
Exactly.
With them.
So sometime in the summer of 2020, we will see some music from you guys.
Yeah, we're going to see something then.
And where would anyone be able to find you guys online? And is there any, like, YouTube videos? Like, what's out there to be caught before this record's
there's made? A little bit out there right now. I've got the Facebook Jack Fiddler Band page. I've got an Instagram. I think it's Jack Fiddler Band or Jack Fiddler, one of the two. Remember, that's JAK, not the weird version.
Remember.
Yeah, remember that. So I've got those standard social medias. We do have a YouTube channel. At this point, we just have one video up on it, and it's an acoustic song I wrote, kind of way on one side of the genre.
Now, didn't Nancy record any of your stuff and upload it, perhaps?
She did.
So it might be out there.
Yeah, there's probably some stuff I did over at her place.
Right.
Various versions of some of my songs.
Because she's good about that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so there might be some full band versions.
Yeah, yeah, there's probably a little bit of that there. And I've uploaded some stuff where I played, like, I think the last stuff we uploaded was when we played Radio Cafe in East Nashville.
Oh, nice.
So I uploaded a couple of songs from there. So people can get an idea what it sounds like live. Mm-hmm. My goal is what you hear on the record's going to be what you hear live.
Of course.
That's the dream.
You can add the orchestra, but you know,
yeah,
can't really bring them with you,
right? You can't take it with you. So I'm gonna try to keep it simple. I'll probably add one more guitar part when I do the record, just to beef it up a bit. But
very nice. Where have you played? I mean, we've mentioned Nancy and Eddie's Plug and Play, which I've seen you there. Have you done much around this music scene?
I've played.
Because clearly you're involved with it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Nancy and Eddie's is my favorite place in Bowling Green to play, hands down, because they're such nice people.
Right.
I've played Spillway.
Yes, you have. I remember that.
I've played there several times. Probably three.
I think I was there one time doing one of these, and you walked in.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't even...
Like, we didn't talk, but I remember I remember looking up, and I was like, I know that guy. I think we're friends on Facebook.
Yeah, so I've played there a couple times. I like that venue.
Yeah.
I play Franklin, Kentucky.
Yes.
I've played
it. And Franklin, like Glasgow and so many surrounding areas, even Morgantown, as we're taping this, it's blowing my mind that Morgantown has a bar.
Yeah.
And they're having live music.
That's cool, though.
It's a trip, yeah. Because that's the one city I never thought would go wet. But Franklin went wet years ago. Mm-hmm. Glasgow not that far behind. And, I mean, we're talking about a decade.
Yeah.
That a decade ago, 10 years ago, those were still dry counties with a restaurant that had an all-age venue and a couple of bands, and now they have full-blown every weekend venues with live music, yeah. And they've got a steady list of bands in rotation that are good. And so it's weird, but it's great at the same time to see Franklin and Glasgow doing what Bowling Green has been doing all these years. Mm-hmm. And it's given more diversity, I think, for the artists and the bands that are in these areas. We can play more than just one city.
Right, and that helps, too, to kind of keeps the bands fresh as well. Because
you're growing your fan base, even though it's a small batch. But a lot of people that might live in Barron County or Allen County or Simpson County may not come to Bowling Green very much.
Right.
And now they don't have to.
Yeah, they can. You know,
the cities
have
grown more. They have no reason to drive across the county line to buy beer.
Right. They can just get it right
there. It's accepted now, and you can go see a good band at a live venue now without leaving your own town.
Yeah, and that's been super. And
where have you played in Franklin? Because I know it's still growing.
Yeah, Franklin's still growing.
It's got quite a few venues now.
I've played it, and I always get them confused. There's an American Legion and a Legion, other kind of Legion.
Vets.
Yeah, and I've played at both of those.
Yeah.
I've played it Overtime Sports Bar and Grill.
Mm-hmm.
I've played at El Patro.
See, the Overtime Sports Bar in Bowling Green used to have live bands quite a bit. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to do that anymore. It's more like karaoke and stuff. But the one in Franklin,
still
seems to be a consistent, every weekend is a live band.
They have about three shows a week at that
it's
one.
It's a
they,
much bigger stage, and it seems like it's a bigger venue.
They put a new stage in, too, which is nice. But they mm-hmm. do a Tuesday night open mic. They do a Thursday night acoustic night. Then they usually have somebody on Saturday that's a full show Saturday. So they've got quite a bit going
on.
So
would you call Franklin, Kentucky more of a reachable home base for you, like musically speaking?
It's
Closer to home.
Yeah,
for you.
Yeah, it is.
And do you live here, or where do you live?
No, I'm living in Portland. I'm living in Portland.
You live in
right
Portland.
Now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm living in Portland now.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so I'm halfway between here and Nashville.
Yeah,
so
that makes total perfect sense.
So I've kind of been kind of swapping.
It's easier to go to Franklin than it is. I mean, it's only a half hour.
Right.
But you know, it's still closer for you to be that close to home and play a gig without having to go too far.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I like Franklin.
Yeah, well, it's changed.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah, I remember.
And it's growing up.
Yeah,
and it's long overdue.
Yeah, definitely is overdue.
What else around this area? Have you played in Glasgow or anything? Like that?
I played at Yancey's in Glasgow.
Yancey's. Okay.
I did a small like acoustic set mm-hmm. over there.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to think where else I've gotten out to.
But again, the band is about a year old.
Yeah, so we're
and
still...
you would it seems to me like the way you talk, like you've done some solo stuff, it's recorded, it's captured, but you seem more interested in making sure the band is getting more involved.
That's been my goal.
So that's where you're standing right now.
Yeah.
That's the next step is I've done all this cool stuff, but it was just me.
Yeah.
I want the three of us to go out.
Yeah,
they need to do things.
The people need to hear what I got going on. Mm-hmm. The full
but
sound.
You've got a great band, apparently.
Oh,
so.
I think it's the best. You know,
good.
Everybody thinks theirs is the best, but
of course, mine sucks.
Yeah, no. But I finally found the sound that I was. Right. You know, you're always searching for a certain tone or whatever, mm-hmm. and building a pedal board for a guitar is that's a constant chase. I finally built the pedal board that I want. I finally have the amp I want.
You've got everything going the way you want.
I've got everybody working the way I want it to work.
You cannot complain at all.
Yeah, no, so I think it's going the way I want it now. I just need to get the full band shows going and get that rolling.
I'm excited to see what the future has in store for you guys. And definitely will be watching. So everyone can check you out and find you on Facebook.
Yeah, find me on Facebook.
And Instagram.
Instagram, yeah. I got a little thing on YouTube.
Okay.
So check those
out. Haven't built the band camp or any of that stuff yet? Till the recording.
I'm going to wait till I get some digital stuff to do that. I'm going to
clearly, if they follow you, they'll see all that.
Yeah, they'll catch all that.
Well, before we wrap this up, one thing I do like to ask people that I interview is being involved in this music scene, even though you do come from Tennessee, you're still coming up here and involved in this local music scene. Who are some of the bands around this area, past or present, that have made an impact on you and that you're a fan of today?
Oh, well, definitely. I've been watching you for quite some time, and I like your stuff.
You creepo.
I know, it's weird. No, I like your stuff. I like Maceo, which is Marty Brown Jr.
Right.
I love his stuff.
Which I confused for some reason. Yeah, I thought that was the band you were in.
No,
but no, that you all just know each other. Yeah, I think you've actually worked together.
We've played together before.
So that might have been why I was connecting that.
I've done some stuff with them
because I knew they were in Franklin. Might have been the other thing. But
and then Rye Davis up here. I don't know if you've seen Rye. I love his stuff.
I interviewed Rye right here where we're sitting.
Heck yeah! No, I like Rye's stuff. Then get down to Franklin Ways. There's Changing Direction. I don't know if you've heard them, but
Sean Burton is an old friend of mine.
Yeah, Sean's
my guy. You know, the cover band thing, like, I did it for a long time, and I'm kind of out of that game now. Mm-hmm. But I really respect him and what he's done with that, because he's very passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a really good set list. Like, it's not the same old, like, they'll play the hits that you would expect, but good about being diverse.
Yeah,
I really have to applaud it. And when I switched to bass full-time, I was watching a lot of Sean. I had to fill in with them one night.
Yeah.
Like, their drummer couldn't make a show, and I played drums for him. And it's like I watched Sean the whole time. So I was getting in this phase of just watching all the bass players that I knew. And so I really have to give a little credit to Sean Burton, because I did admire him as a fellow musician, as a friend. And then later on, I got to, like, observe his bass playing.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah, no, he's awesome.
He's a super cool
guy. He does a lot for the music scene.
He does.
And Franklin, especially, he hosts an open mic night.
Yep.
And he's had me out several times. He's like a feature artist, which is always cool.
Yep. That's true. I forget that he's the one that kind of hosts that event, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Gets different people in to be like the special guest.
Yeah, do the special guest, and then they'll let anybody else come up and, you know, kind of fill in between.
But the main artist that's promoted for that week gets to do like a performance, like a full set.
Yeah, they'll kind of usually you start it and then you finish it. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
shout out Sean Burton.
Yeah, I love Sean Burton. Yeah,
who else stands out? Anybody else?
Those are definitely my favorites.
Yeah,
for sure. And then I some of the rock. I think you're doing a show with. Golly, names are bad.
There's so many
Gravel.
Oh, Gravel and Spiders, but they're from Louisville.
Oh, are they from Louisville?
But
okay.
Gravel Switch is from Jamestown. And a lot of people might get that mixed up because of the name.
Yeah, that's too similar.
Two Gravels.
Yeah, two Gravels.
Yeah, Gravel and Spiders is from Louisville.
Yeah.
I've been following them for years. Yeah. They're a great band. Super fun to watch and comedic.
Yeah.
But yet serious punk rock at the same time. It's like, it's literally the 50-50 of both.
Yeah.
But they're fun to watch.
And then there's the No Deposit Band. I don't know if you know them or not. But
those, I do. I actually
know. They're really cool guys.
I know Jackie, actually. Yeah. I've gotten to know him over the course of about a year or so.
Yeah. And they go all the way down. They go all the way down to Gallatin and all the way everywhere else. So
I know they're kind of here. They seem to play at the Pit Stop quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I do know they travel and do the weekend warrior kind of thing and go to different area venues, which, you know, to go from here to northern Tennessee isn't a very challenging thing to do at all.
No, but
we're in a great spot.
It really is, because you can kind of catch everything. You can go all the way up to Owensboro and back down.
I mean, there's people in Gallatin that don't leave Gallatin.
Oh, that's true.
They have everything they need there. And to them, if they're going to go in somewhere, they're going to go to Nashville. They're not going to come up here.
Right.
You know, so that's common.
Yeah.
But, No Deposit Band, doing pretty good. Yeah. That's an interesting story about them too. They were an old band, like from like 1969 or something.
Yeah, yeah, and they just kind of kept going.
Yeah, they brought it back and rehashed the name and brought it back to life with a few different people, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, no,
good people. Again, they're also friends with Nancy.
Yeah, that's how
you met them through her?
Ultimately, that's how I met them, was through Nancy.
Yeah.
And went down and saw them play a show at Gallatin. And it was super.
Very cool.
So it was very nice.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything I missed? Anything I wanted to, or you wanted to talk about before we wrap things up here?
No, we talked about everything. I think we talked about everything, I guess.
Well, be sure to check out the Jack Fiddler Band, and don't confuse it with Jake.
Yeah.
Drop the E.
Yeah. Yeah. Check out the Jack Fiddler Band.
Yeah. And obviously, you guys have got some cool things coming up. So
I hope so. So
looking forward to it. And thank you for being here and being a part of the Sound Atlas. On location at Mellow Mass Music and More, where everyone in here is bored to tears listening to us talk about music.
And we got 8 tracks on sale today.
8 tracks on sale. 1 penny. Today only. Mellow Matt approves.
That's it.
Thank you, and see you around.
Thank you.